position to take part at the moment, because maybe they're part of the semi-state or the state agencies, they can't be seen on a somewhat dubious station. Again, I mean, maybe health services might be glad. It makes their life easier. And I think that's the one thing about the radio that we'd like to emphasise more and more, is for community groups, and that, not that they're doing us a favour by filling up 5 minutes talking about their community group, but that they see the radio as a service to them to get word out to the broadest number of people that you'll never do with posters or meetings, say.
So rather than a case of somebody coming in and just giving an interview for 15 minutes about what's going on in their community council or such, that you'd have maybe a report from week to week from different community councils rather than interviews and things like that.
I think so. I think the whole thing opened up there. And you did mention this part, sorry, the second part of that question about documentaries. It is, in fact, the one area we haven't touched on. And again, it's because it's so time consuming. Mm-hmm. But I hope, you know, again, it might be some area that somebody, say, you're particularly interested in, like, say, Michael Gibbons is in archaeology.
Yeah.
We'd hope that Michael, with the assistance of somebody here and a technical person, would more or less design that himself.
Yeah.
So if there is somebody there who has an interest in something, anything, they might undertake to do the documentary.
I'm sure. I just listened I didn't catch all of Michael's programme. What I did get of it was very, very interesting. But I do remember Michael O'Toole really impressed me the night he was on about the farming. And I learned later, I took it for granted he was reading out of a book, but he had it completely off the cuff, I learned later. And when you have people with that kind of information to give to people, you know, they really are educational to listen to.
I think the other thing, Paddy, if I could just come in here for a minute.
Yeah.
The other thing people have to realise is that the station has been on the air for about, I suppose, about 8 weeks. And the people who are involved in it really are people who have little or no experience. So that hopefully, as it, you know, as people gain more experience, and as, you know, if it may be possible to expand the 3 hours a little bit more as well, that then, you know, the kind of things that all these kind of things, it's unlimited really, the areas you can get involved in. The whole idea here at the beginning was to try to keep the thing on the air for 8 weeks and hopefully be able to stay afloat until the 31st of December, when we'd have to close down. Now, I think the closing down, in fact, is going to be a blessing in disguise, because it gives us all a chance to kind of reflect now on the whole thing, on the feedback we've got, and, you know, what people are saying about it and so on. And to, you know, when having the break, to hopefully come back with, you know, possibly better programming and better presentation and so on.
There are areas, of course, that we, you know, we have I know I've learned, starting off the first week here, it was traumatic, you know, trying to work out a programme and that type of thing. And the one thing I think that you mentioned there, Mary, doing smaller blocks, different people are doing smaller blocks for on the nights, it seems like a great idea. And there's areas like that the radio can be greatly improved, and you can mix the educational, environmental and all that type of thing, you know. Another question in here from this one. This is one of those ones that I think puts the cat among the pigeons. You don't get Craig, so what happens then? This is the question from our listener.
If you don't get Craig, I think you have to look for another site, say in the Clifton area, to cover Clifton Town. That's the principal sort of black spot we have at the minute.
Yeah.
As it is, we're covering quite a lot of North Connemara. I think what would happen in that case is we'd have to have at least another site, which is likely to aim to cover Clifton Town.
Yeah.
And that's probably as much as we could go with at the moment. But it would mean that there would be some black spots left. Mm-hmm. It would probably mean in the long term we would try to have a series of transmitters around the place. It's not a very desirable alternative, because obviously with a series of transmitters you have the greater risk of breakdown and etc.
Yeah.
But and as far as I know, Michael, that's probably the option we'd have.
Yeah, do you mean that if the person doesn't get Craig, or if we don't get Craig?
If the radio doesn't get Craig,
yeah. Well, I mean, that's... Yeah, Mary has answered that anyway.
Yeah.
And the other thing about it is it's going to depend on money and how much money we have available, because transmitters cost a couple of £1,000, £2,500, £3,000. So that you have to cut your cloth, you know.
The main advantage, of course, with Craig is not only the mast up there, it's the electricity, isn't it? That's...
Well, the electricity is a big consideration all the time, because people sometimes think, well, you know, why can't you go up on the hill anyway and stick up the mast?
Yeah.
But that's fine if there's electricity there, and if the right line is going there. If it isn't, it's going to cost the earth to get a line up there. That's why we were limited. There was the only one site. We spent days and days and days combing the whole area around here, right out as far as Clifton.
Yeah.
And the one site we could get which had electricity very convenient to it and had a fairly reasonable degree of height was the one we picked.
Craig.
The Craig obviously is tailor made.
Yes.
But the alternative to Craig is the one we're using at the moment,
yeah,
in Glenville.
Yeah, and that's with the permission of Stevie Wallace.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if we hadn't got Stevie's permission, we'd have been in big trouble.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. I suppose we come to the question of where does local radio go from here? We get the license. We've covered that it's come in many areas. But your big hopes, Michael first, and then we'll go to Mary.
Well, I think where does it go from here? I think it. Hopefully, first of all, we're going to get a license. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
Because if we don't get that, that's the end of it. And we're pretty certain that we will. I think my main idea about it anyway is that what I said already is that it has to reflect the community. It has to reflect the wishes of the people in this particular area, in the whole North Connemara area. And that we just don't turn into a kind of either an RT1 or an RT2. But that it's a very distinctive type of radio station, that it reflects the whole culture, the whole thinking, the whole ethos of this whole area here. And I think if it does, I think people are going to be interested and people are going to support it. And that's what it's all about as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Mary, your hopes for it?
Yeah, I'd second say Michael's views there, and maybe we'd use as a logo, which I've seen somewhere in a Sean McBride report about radio, that he thinks community radio is a community talking to itself. And I think it's a nice idea. It's like, you know, it's free to people to have access there, obviously within limits, but it should be a place where people see that they can use themselves, that's useful to them, and that they feel free and welcome to be part of. The other thing that maybe I'd take the opportunity of, as soon as we're talking about using the radio, is that it will always depend on volunteers. And there are all sorts of things that people can do. If they just feel like they can't be here or get to the actual building to do any of the jobs that, you know, that we need people to do every night that it's on air, there are also jobs to be done, as I mentioned earlier, collecting news, maybe getting advertisements for us, maybe just taking an advertisement is obviously supporting the radio station. The other areas are maybe donations of records. In fact, it's been one of the areas we've had some feedback on that's been slightly negative, but that we don't have maybe play enough kind of music that people like. But as I said earlier, we're limited. We ask people who come in, presenters, to bring their own music with them. And if we were able to build up a library, obviously there'd be more access to the records here. That's an area that maybe somebody would like to show some support and maybe donate something like records. And the other thing is, I think in the future we're going to have to look at other ways of raising money. The advertising will never raise sufficient money, I think, to keep the station on the air. And I know, you know, again from talking to other stations, and it doesn't happen so much in Ireland, but say in the States, I know they do it. They have what they call a friend of the station, and it varies. It can be like maybe for £5 a month, or maybe something more or something less, you become a friend of the station. It means that you support it. You don't actually do anything, but you support the station. And in return for that, you're kept, you know, maybe through a written thing, in contact with what's going on in the station and how it's developing, and maybe invited to a meeting every now and again. But I think we're going to be looking at all these ways over the next 2 months and asking for, I suppose, direct support from the community in that sense.
Yeah.
Sorry, Patty, if I could just come in there. I was just thinking today, in fact, one of the things we do here is we record each evening's programme and it goes out the following morning. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when we get a licence, we'll be obliged to do that and to keep the tapes. If you just take the cost of that alone, the tapes that we use here, the two tapes we use to record the programme cost about £5 an evening. That's about £35 a week, and that's the guts of £2,000 a year, just for those blank tapes alone.
Yeah.
Not talking about tapes that you're going out recording people and things like that in, or tapes that you have to buy pre-recorded tapes. So that, you know, there's a fair deal of money involved in running the station. So the support that people, it's one of the encouraging things about it is the number of people who have expressed support and have asked, you know, how can they help? And even people have said about, you know, could we go around and collect money and that type of thing. I hope we'll never have to do that. But the other area, I think, you know, where there might be a possibility as well, Mary, we're talking about today, is a lot of people have come and asked, you know, could you get us a tape of that particular program, or could you get a tape of that particular interview? I think in the future, one of the things we should think about doing is recording certain pieces that are done on the radio and making them available to people, you know, to buy them at maybe £3 or £4 or whatever. Because I think a lot of the things that would be interesting for people to send to England or send to America, particularly if it was in their own area or had something to do with their own area, I think that's a possibility for raising a certain amount of finance. But we'll just have to start putting our heads together, I think, now during this break, on the whole area of finance and how it's going to be, how the whole thing is going to be run.
Are there any fears at all about it, that the license might be an expensive item, or that it might be?
Again, we simply don't know.
No.
There is one option that, in a sense, we hope. Well, there's one option that we really like, which is that the license will be free to community groups. Mm-hmm. I know there was some pressure to do that, but I'm not sure that that would cut any ice, really. The other option is that the cost of the license will be related either to your turnover per year or to the population to which you're brought, you know, by per capita. Mm-hmm. So obviously ours will be a lot smaller than it would be in Dublin, which is only fair because their opportunities to earn income are much larger than ours will ever be. So we hope that that isn't going to be a major cost. It's going to be a cost, though, but we hope not a major one.
Good. So is there anything else now? You're the experts. Anything else you'd like to add before we wrap it up?
Well, I think you've covered most of the questions. In fact, I'd say that people would probably be asking. I think the main thing is that feeling of support out there from people is extremely important, mm-hmm. particularly when it's on a voluntary basis. Because I think if people are working voluntary and putting a lot of effort into it, ever kind of get the feeling that people are not interested, that they don't support it, or that they couldn't care less whether it's there or not, I think then people would start to grow less interested and not put in the same amount of work. So I think that feeling, whatever about the money and everything else, that feeling of support all the time, which has been very, very evident over the last 2 months,
indeed,
that is extremely important all the time for the people who are out there.
Yeah, and even for the presenter, it's an important thing to get a bit of feedback. Sure. Whether it's critical or not, it's always important to know, you know, if you're doing something wrong, maybe you can correct it, you know.
Yes.
But it's always... So you're going to... Mary, you have something to add?
Just on that, I mean, as well as, you know, that it's important that we've had the support of the listeners, which it absolutely is. Mm-hmm. The other thing I think we were a bit wary of maybe 2 months ago was, you know, depending on volunteers to run the thing 3 hours a day, you know, was worrying. I mean, was it going to happen, or would they arrive, or would some evening the petty cane just not be here on Friday evening? And I must say that the experience with volunteers has been really a positive one. We've never been let down by volunteers. If they said they'd be here, they have been here. And I mean, it certainly is encouraging for the future. I think we can plan for a station run by volunteers.
That's a happy note.
Well, just one last thing I'd like to say. I'd like to pay tribute to Mary here, who has put a tremendous amount of work into the station. Mary's been working on it full time. The rest of us have been here in and out to meetings and doing a bit here and there. But Mary has been working on this full time, I'd say, for 12 months. And she has put an unbelievable amount of work into it. Research, she's travelled to meetings, she's gone to seminars, she's gone here, there and everywhere. She's organised the training sessions. And I think without the kind of work Mary has been put into, there's no way the station would ever have been realised. So I think she deserves a lot of credit for it.
Indeed. And a round of applause all round, I think.
That's not
good. I was thinking about that today, you know, that Mary, it will be a welcome break for you, Mary.
Yeah, it's time for the news, come on now.
Okay, we're going to go with a record, and what better record to go with than the most requested record since the station went on air? It's Galway Bay by Dolores Cain.
My own dear Galway Bay. Now it's over to Anne Keneally in Roundstone with the Roundstone News Roundup. Good evening, Anne.
Good evening, Paddy. Good evening, everybody. Roundstone was saddened by the news of the death of Giorgio Conroy. Giorgio is a native of Roundstone and has lived in London with his family for the past many years. He died on St. Stephen's Day. His funeral takes place in London on Thursday next. He is survived by his wife, son, daughter, his brother Paddy from Roundstone, and his nieces and nephews of Cleggan. The death has also taken place in London of Carnaman Pat Ridge. Pat's sister Mary Ann and her family have come to settle in Roundstone 6 years ago. The Christmas passed nice and peaceful here in Roundstone. Midnight Mass was well attended, and judging by the activity of the children since, Fancy was extra generous. Lots of visitors have flocked into Roundstone for the New Year festivities, with all available houses full. Amongst the many visitors you can meet in the village is Dave Heffernan of Pop Quiz Number 1. Bottoms Hotel are in full preparation for their first New Year's ball. Music by Brendan Mulhere and his big time band. A limited amount of tickets are available. As that's all there is from Roundstone this week, I would like to take this opportunity to wish all the listeners and the staff of the radio a very happy new year. Good night.
Thank you very much, Anne, and thank you very much over the last number of weeks for doing the roundup for the radio. We won't be calling on you now again for
a number of months,
but hopefully we will be back to you again in the very near future.
Thank you.
Good night, Anne.
Bye.
God bless.
Good night.
Right, that was Anne Keneally from Roundstone with the Roundstone News Roundup. In about 5 minutes or so, we're going to have Kenny on. As I said, Kenny has a very special guest tonight. He has Pat Gannon, who represented Ireland in the Rowing Olympics. I think it was the four-man rowing in the Olympics a number of years back. So that should be a very interesting interview. Now we continue with a bit of music. This time it's from the Belt of the Celts album, and it's the Wolf Tones with Some Say the Devil is Dead.
Some say the devil is dead, the devil is dead, the devil is dead. Some say the devil is dead and buried in Killarney. More say he rose again, more say he heroes again, more say heroes again, and join the British Army. Be the pigs and milk the cow, and milk the cow, and milk the cow. Be the pigs and milk the cow, and early in the morning, tuck your leg up, Paddy dear, I'm over here. Tuck your leg up, Paddy dear, it's time to stop your yarn. Some say the devil is dead, the devil is dead, the devil is dead. Some say the devil is dead and buried in Killarney. More say he rose again, more say he rose again, more say he rose again and joined the British Army. Katie, she is tall and thin, she's tall and thin and tall and thin. Katie, she is tall and thin and likes a drops of brandy. Drinks it in the bed each night, drinks it in the bed each night, drinks it in the bed each night, it makes her nice and randy. Some say the devil is dead, the devil is dead, the devil is dead. Some say the devil is dead and buried in Killarney. Poor say he rose again, poor say he rose again, poor say he rose again and joined the British Army. Diddly-daddle-dum-dee-daddle, 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 diddly-daddle-dum-dee-daddle. Man is 6 foot tall, he's 6 foot tall, he's 6 foot tall. My man is 6 foot tall, he likes his sugar candy. Goes to bed at 6 o'clock, goes to bed at 6 o'clock, goes to bed at 6 o'clock, he's lazy, fat and bandy. Some say the devil is dead, the devil is dead, the devil is dead. Some say the devil is dead and buried in Killarney. More say he rose again, more say he rose again, more say he rose again and joined the British Army. The wife, she has the hairy thing, a hairy thing, a hairy thing. The wife, she has a hairy thing. She showed it to me on Sunday. She bought it in a furrier shop. Bought it in a furrier shop. Bought it in a furrier shop. It's going back on Monday. Some say the devil is dead. The devil is dead. The devil is dead. Some say the devil is dead and buried in Killarney. Oh, say he rose again. Oh, say he rose again. Oh, say he rose again and joined the British Army.
Clifton Motorworks wish all their friends and customers a very happy and prosperous new year. Anne and Pat Welsh, Welsh's Seafood in Cleggan, would like to wish all their customers a prosperous new year. Matt O'Sullivan and staff estate agents, insurance broker, The Square Clifton, wish all our customers and friends a very happy and peaceful new year and continued success in 89. Willie and Bernie Hughes of the Garage Cleggan wish all their customers and friends a very happy and prosperous new year. The Coasters would like to take this opportunity to thank all their followers and the publicans for their support in 1988 and wish them a very happy new year. Sweeney's Cladaduff and Sweeney's Oil Clifton wish all their customers a happy and prosperous new year. Joyce's Bar Cleggan would like to wish all their customers a very happy and prosperous new year. Veldon's wish local radio and everyone a very happy new year. Baby, 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 baby
baby, come back, baby, come. Come back, baby, come. Come back, baby, I wanna play out of you. Listen, let me tell you, baby, what I'm talking about. Come on back to me, little girl, so we can play us a thousand out. Baby, come back, baby, come. Come back, baby, come.
Welcome to our sports desk on this Friday evening, the Friday between Christmas and New Year. Very little sport happening, but we have pulled a little coup. We've been joined by one of the few Olympians to come out of Connemara. He'd been Pat Gannon. We'll be talking to Pat in a few minutes. First, I just want to give you one result that I've got over the Christmas. That was Connemara Rugby Club's captains and presidents match on St. Stephen's Day. The presidents won that match 40 points to 22. We will be with you tomorrow evening at 5:30 doing it'll be a semi-sports programme. We're going to play you some music. I'm going to be joined by Pat Lydon and we're going to just have a chat about, well, our sporting days together and having a look forward to the coming year's sport, and we might make a couple of predictions and hang ourselves and whatever. But now I'm going to go to Pat Gannon. You're welcome, Pat, into the studio, and it's a pleasure to have you. As I said before, we treat it as a bit of a coup. Introducing Pat, I'll tell you that he participated in the 1980 Moscow Olympics. And I'm going to ask him to talk to us a little about his experiences. And he's also delved into other sports, winning a county medal with Wynn Vile, I think it was 1978, and also had the honour of playing a bit of rugger with the likes of Fergus Slattery and Willie Duggan and a few of these other Blackrock stalwarts. Pat, maybe first we'll start by asking you to tell us how you were introduced to rowing.
Well, the job that I joined actually got me involved, and but my first view of it was when I saw the club's four in 1976 in the Olympics in Montreal, and they were
rowing in their semi-final, winning. They were coming second and about to qualify for the final. When they had a misfortune and they caught a bad stroke, and the Russians passed them, and they failed to make the final that year in 76, and it was a great disappointment to the club, as I found out later. At the time, it was a disappointment to me, because I was looking at four home-based Irish fellas, four fellas like myself.
Had you actually gone to Templemore at that stage?
Oh, not at all.
No, you were still at home. You were still at school.
Still at school. Yeah.
Yeah, and had you a plan at that stage that you might end up in Templemore?
Not at all, no. I had no ideas what I would do.
No. And you eventually then went to Templemore and seen that you had a chance to emulate these guys. These guys actually won the small final that year, did they?
They won the small final. It was a canter, according to them. They should have reached the final. They should have got a medal.
Yeah, and in 1980, when you participated, you actually won the small final as well.
In 1980, we won the little final,
How close did you get to qualified for the final?
In actual fact, we should have qualified for the final. Everybody would always say, I should have done this, I should have done that. But a Swedish crew qualified for the final, and we'd been beating them all year.
Yeah.
And we went off the start just wrong. We hit a lane of boys, and a couple of bad strokes meant that we were two to three lengths behind the Swedish crew, and there was just no way we could make it up.
Who was with you on that?
Willie Ryan was driving the crew at the time.
Willie Ryan, who also rode eights with you, I think, again, in the four.
Willie has a long career in rowing.
He was with you in Hindley, right?
We won in Hindley in 79. Willie stroked a four in 79 in Hindley. We won
that was the
elite
Prince
fours.
Of Wales.
The Prince Philip.
Prince Philip, And who was involved with you and who brought you into it when you went to Templemore?
There was a guy called Brian Lynch. He was very much involved with the club at the time and had the club at heart. And he through his own voluntary decision, decided to go down to Templemore as an instructor.
So he obviously and seen potential when he seen you at it first, or was it your physique that...
He was going for guys with height and with not... Did he himself would say they didn't have to be strongly built or anything, because when you start training up there with the club, you develop the strength. Obviously, people who were liked, who didn't mind doing hard work, were an advantage.
Yeah, if the outer structure was okay, they could put the muscle on it.
You
were telling me earlier that you found that even when you were working at home, in your younger years, that you found that it may have even been a help to develop a person.
Well, there was in the back of my mind, there's always the possibility that I wanted to go to such and such a place, whether the chance. I won a county medal with in basketball.
The playing of basketball, one of your brothers excelled at table tennis, I believe, didn't he?
That's right, Paul.
Paul, I know he's out there listening somewhere, but I'll tell you, we're going to take a break from the music. We'll be back with Pat, and we're going to talk a little bit more about maybe his rugby and Gaelic exploits, and also talk to him about some of the friends he met in Moscow, and you might call it name dropping, but I'll tell you, he can drop a few bombs on you when you hear the names, he knows. Thank you. Okay, there we had Fats Domino. Now we're back with Pat Gannon here. For those of you that weren't with us at the start, we're having a chat with Pat about his exploits in Moscow in 1980, and we're now going to, for a moment, move on to the other sports that he has taken part in. We'll start with Gaelic football. 1978 is a year to remember for you.
I got on, I don't know how I got on the team, because I had very little training. I came back. I must have been in Tipperamore at the time, and I was asked to play with the Rinvile team. And
this was in the county junior final.
That's right. I was only too delighted to. I was. I can't remember too well about it. I know that we won. I can't actually remember. I only catching a couple of balls, and that's it.
Yeah.
And it was a great. I like the.
Yeah, but you never followed up really the Gaelic. Well, of course, you were so involved with the rowing, I suppose you didn't get the opportunity to do it really.
You get so involved with the rowing. Rowing is, to me, it was 7 days a week. And I was always asked up there to play by the guy that looks after the Gaelic side of it. I declined. And
now this is almost going back to the rowing again, but you must have created something of a record for somebody who had never actually, at school level or anything like that, done anything with rowing. And you were. Would we say really thrown in at the deep end as rowing goes, really?
That's right. Our first international regatta was a place called in Salzgitter in West Germany.
Right.
And we went over there, and the first day we actually won, we were in a Cox 4. I was with Willie Ryan and Christy O'Brien, who were two experienced fellas. And the other person was Ted Ryan, a brother of Willie, who had rowed the year before. And they were well known on the circuit of rowing, Willie and Christy, and one of the a silver medalist from 76 was actually talking to Willie, and he was saying, "What are you doing this year?" And Willie said, "Well, we're rowing with two novices, which means two beginners, and we're just trying them out." And he had a
you being one of the novices.
I was one of the novices, and Ted was the other novice.
All right, yeah.
And he had a look at us, and he says to Willie, he says, "Well, what were they doing for the last 10 years?"
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
He says, and he says, "Well, it's just hard work." He says,
"Yeah, yeah." What is your matter? Where did you go to school?
I went to school in Galway in Indus.
Indus. All right, yeah. If it was the Bish or the Jazz, you would have been introduced to it, I'm sure.
Yeah, the Bish or the Jazz do the rowing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't go there, no.
Now, for people who went to Moscow, just off the top of my head, I remember I had a casual interest in rowing, but the name, if somebody mentions rowing to me, then the name that automatically springs to mind is Sean Dre. Was Dre in Moscow with you?
No.
No, he had gone over the top of that stage.
Dre had been in Montreal. Yeah,
probably the unluckiest Olympian of all time,
In the Irish viewpoint, he was.
So you might, as we said, drop a few names. You might, who was with you in Moscow?
Coming up to Moscow, we had a facility out in Ballantyre in Dublin,
community school,
which was allocated to us to train in, and one of the fellows training there was Stephen Roach.
Yes.
And I remember seeing Stephen at the time, and I said, how can that fellow ride a bike? He's so small, you know?
Yeah.
To me, he was like a jockey.
Yeah, right.
And this crack, we were out there pumping with these weights and training hard, and those guys went out there and they rode this bike on a machine with wheels on it, with the rollers on it, and that's all they did. They didn't do anything like the training we did, but I suppose it's a different sport. It was something at the time I didn't understand. but Barry McGuigan was another man that was in Moscow with me. And I remember after he was knocked out of the championship in Moscow, the disappointment in the boxing camp was...
He was actually knocked out in his qualification, if I remember correctly, wasn't he?
I know it was points, and I didn't see them.
He was disqualified. I remember hearing an old story about himself and Roach after Roach had been disastrous in the road race thing, and they sat on a bridge. I remember hearing it somewhere, and they looked at each other and said, "We're going nowhere."
Yeah, it's surprising how the road turns in this
world champions.
Yeah.
Now, well, I'm going to move on to what may be deemed as a bit of a controversial issue: drugs and sport. How, when you hear something like the Johnson story, what comes to mind? What do you think about it?
It's sad that that you have to use sport to win, use drugs to win. So.
Yeah.
But as the pressure on him from his sponsors and from himself, he was probably a person who wants to win, and he looked at it as a short term sort of investment on his health.
Yeah. So you see it as if the reason he used the drugs was for success, because it's pleased his sponsors, that brings in the element of professionalism into it again, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, sport is professional to a certain extent. Those people, they are making a living out of it, and...
but this could never be said of the rowing or something like that, because it's usually...
Not in Ireland at the moment.
Yeah, but do you think so on the continent?
Oh, yeah, certainly, yeah.
That there is money made out?
We've suspected for years that the East Germans and the Russians, have been on drugs. I know myself, coming into the summer, hot summer months, the weight just falls off us, our faces go lean, and you look at an East German across from you on a start, and he's got puffiness on his cheeks, and you just wonder, how does he manage to keep that on him and still sweat so much?
Yeah.
So it's we've often wondered about it. You still say to yourself, it is possible to do these things. It is possible to surpass them. If you do the right things, if you do them perfect, if you go for the perfection, the
whole... But it still puts you at a disadvantage, surely.
It puts you at a disadvantage to a certain extent, but if you believe that you can do it, if you can have the time and have the person who has the know-how...
Yeah, but it can be the difference between two people of equal standards. The introduction of drugs to one of them can be then.
Possibly, I suppose the Johnson and the Lewis.
Well, I suppose Johnson, the Lewis saga, proves that it.
Lewis, to me, is the perfect athlete. He had the only way he could have been beaten was by drugs.
That's my thinking
on it.
Okay, we'll have a few minutes left, and we're going to your rugby exploits. You married into a famous rugby family.
That's right, George Norton. A daughter of George Norton,
Triple Crown winner. Fullback on the Irish Triple Crown team.
49.
Yeah, and you did, I remember the first day that I seen you playing rugby. And Connemara was never known for having very big forwards. But I'll ask you a question. Can you remember who played second row with you the first day you played for Connemara?
It was...
Give me an honest answer now. Can you remember who it was?
The Martin Davis?
No. The man that played, I remember, I'll never forget it actually, the man that played second row, it was a guy called Peter Mullen.
Really?
And you wouldn't know which year was the highest, because you're both about 6'5.5", but Peter actually played that day. But you went on and you played with Blackrock, right?
That's right, Joe. I went up there after the Moscow Olympics, and through the connection with my brother-in-law, Inder, and... I got training. I was introduced to the coach of the second team, which is the next step to the first team.
Yeah, to the first team. Yeah.
And I found out that I was far fitter than most of them. And next thing was that they were short, or a true illness, or injury on their first team. I ended up playing on second row with their first team, and I was playing in second row with a fella called Leo Monaghan from Drogheda,
who
played at Blackrock College.
Yeah,
it was a youth international.
That's right, yeah.
And at number 8 behind me was Willie Duggan. And out on the forwards, also in the forwards, was Fergus Slattery. And it was a great experience.
Fairly illustrious company.
I stopped in the January of 81 through illness and...
How long did you play, actually,
I only played 4 or 5 months. But we went down to actually Gary Owen down in Limerick, and we played against Limerick, and one of the players there was Tony Ward.
All right, yeah.
That's right. I had a good game there.
That was an experience.
It was nice. It was nice to be able to say that you could play with these guys and play against
them. That's right, yeah.
And I think it's a possibility that it just arose through opportunity more than talent or anything like that. I think it's
well, there again, your physique would probably have been an advantage to you.
Probably, yeah. They were looking at my height and saying that catch a ball or two in the line-out. And actually, last year, 88, the season of 88, I played with a team that was way down the ranks, third seas. I played 5 matches in a cup and we won it outright.
No, yeah. You've never played with Garda or anything like that, no?
No, I haven't. No.
You've been okay, Pat. I'm just going to ask you one thing before we finish, and that is a message to young people. Considering what you achieved without ever having been introduced to rowing until you were 18 or 19 years, what would you have as a message to young people who would strive to attain maybe the heights you had, but similarly wouldn't have the opportunity that you didn't have?
Well, it's if you keep thinking about it, and if you realise that you want to do it, the opportunity will come if you keep yourself in that frame of mind. The fact that I went up and lived in Dublin, the opportunity arose for me, and a lot of people are going to move maybe to England or abroad, and the skill of them having played football here will enhance their chances of playing whatever sport or whatever, and joining whatever club will be near them over there in that country. And if some person with a load of skill or any sort of skill will fit into a good team and will perform just as easy as I did.
So you're saying that
I just filled a space that was vacant at a